more Cal Banyan's Hypnosis Etc. with Meredith Locker and our special guest, Celeste Hackett. She's back. Celeste Hackett is just one of the top of this profession. She became a hypnotherapist and then just didn't feel like she had enough, so she got trained by Cal Banyan, and now she is a CPHI, a certified professional hypnosis instructor, and runs a school in Texas, just outside of Dallas, and she's definitely one of those people I would turn to if I needed some questions answered about a particular client. She writes wonderful articles. If you haven't checked those out, you can find those through hypnosis.org, and I'm just really excited to have her back for another segment of fascinating hypnosis cases. She shared last, if you haven't checked it out yet, she shared a really fascinating case on the missing orgasm button. She helped to return an orgasm button to a client. Have you ever done that? I doubt it. So thank you so much for Celeste for coming back today and sharing more fascinating hypnosis cases. How are you doing?
Hey, Meredith, I'm doing just great, and it was so much fun last week, we had to do it again. And so, you know, going through the files, I found another case that I just really like, and it's the case of the secret obsession. And my client's name is Abby. She came in, I'm just going to get right into it. Abby comes in, she wants to lose weight. Nothing all that usual. We see a lot of weight loss clients. She's 54. She's dressed really nice in an expensive running suit, and she plays racquetball avidly. She's about 50 pounds overweight. I don't know if you know about racquetball, but that burns a lot of calories. So I'm wondering, you know, because she's like playing almost every day, what she must be eating. That's what I'm thinking, you know, because gosh, that racquetball is really something. She's on a league. And so she, you know, she watches the videos that we show, and I do the intake with her, and she's pretty down in the dumps about her weight. She's tried everything to no avail, and her husband actually suggests hypnosis because he enjoys reading hypnosis books, or actually it's not hypnosis books, but books on the power of the subconscious. And lately they've started reading them together, and she's been struggling with this for so long. He says, "Hun, let's find you a hypnotist," and so they end up calling me. She's American, but she's traveled and lived all over the world. And she moved here about a year earlier from the Netherlands, and she loved the Netherlands. It was the best place she ever lived, and she had been here a year, and she was really lonely. She didn't have a job. She'd always been a stay-at-home mom. Her kids recently had gone off to college, and that's one of the reasons why she was getting into racquetball. So because she was so lonely, I made sure that, she, you know, to really emphasize the secret language of feelings. If you want to know more about that, there's plenty of podcasts on the secret language of feelings. It's just helping clients understand how their feelings can drive them to do behaviors. For instance, if you feel too stressed or bored, in order to try to make yourself feel better, you might eat, which is what a lot of weight loss clients do. I asked her, you know, about when did her weight problem begin. She said about before kindergarten. I asked her about her eating habits. She ate large portions. She made poor food choices, and she snacked between meals, and she said she just really couldn't get a handle on the food thing. And she thought if she could get those things under control, she'd lose the weight. She certainly didn't need to exercise anymore, though. And since weight loss requires the effort by your client, and this is really important with weight loss, that they really have to come up with a plan. Their hypnosis reinforces their plan. So she wanted to just count calories, and she understood that it would take her effort. So that was great. So I knew what I needed to do. I needed to help her. Well, her effort was going to be make better food choices. She had to put her effort into that, both when shopping and eating. Plan her meals, eat only when she's really truly hungry or mealtime, stop eating when she's full. She said she couldn't tell when she was full, but hypnosis, I've never seen it not help with that. So I knew that I was pretty confident she'd be able to tell when she was hungry, usually hungry or not hungry, usually after the first session. I also asked her to commit to not eating in front of the TV or the computer and to continue her racquetball. And I was going to teach her Seventh Path, which is a self-hypnosis method. And I had her promise, or rather commit to doing that. So all that went well. Good setup. We're off and running. We do the first session. She does great. First session is all about preparing the client for the real work, which starts in the second session, testing, making sure that they're going to a good level of hypnosis, because we're going to do some things that need deep hypnosis, like at least somnambulism or the threshold in the second session, and convincing the client that they're in hypnosis. And we have certain convincers that we use, like upon suggestion they can't open their eyes. We call that eye lock. She did very well in the first session, wasn't able to open her eyes. Also, she was able to distort time. She thought that the session was 20 minutes, it was an hour, and so on. So that first session went well. Second session, you know what? We did regression. I had her bring up the feeling that had everything to do with her hunger. This is what you do when you do hypnosis, just for just about every problem. There's a feeling inside of you that you just don't like. It has everything to do with why you called me. It's basically what you're saying. And I'd like you to find that feeling. In a moment, I'll count from 1 to 5. It'll come up as powerful and as strong as it's ever been. And then you do that, and they bring up the feeling, and then you follow it back to an earlier time when they felt that way. With weight loss, it's really important. Let me back up a little bit. So you follow back to these times when they had this feeling. And usually, let's say somebody brings up a feeling in their stomach, and they go back to, jump back was she was 15 years old, arguing with her mom because she wanted to stay out past curfew, and she was thinking all the other kids get to stay out late, and she was angry. Okay, so that feeling of anger she felt in her stomach. And so the whole point of, but a weight loss client doesn't necessarily have to feel it in their stomach, but they often do. And so you keep going back following the feeling to different scenes that have everything to do with their problem. And what happens is once you get to the very, as far back as you can go, which would be the very beginning of the problem, then you have to begin neutralizing the emotions involved in the problem. Because what's happening with weight loss is these feelings can get so strong that they cause them to want to do anything to feel better. And for some people, that means eat. For other people, it means drink. For other people, it means smoke. Well, she had a food problem. So the scenes don't necessarily, when you do weight loss, the scenes that you're going to see, they don't necessarily deal with food. Sometimes they do, but usually it's just a feeling inside, and this is the problem. This feeling causes people to eat too much. I think that's a really fascinating thing to think about. When I first became a hypnotist, I thought all this, if it was a weight loss client, then we needed to go back through times when they ate, and if they didn't do that, then I must be doing something wrong, or my client must. Meredith, do you have anything to say about that? Any comments there?
Yeah, well, I find the same exact thing. I think it's actually the rarer subsequent sensitizing event, which is when we're going in age regression and we jump back. That's what those are, those different events that we visit. And I find that it's actually less common for those to be related to food than it is to find that they are related to food, in my experience. I mean, there are certainly some of those clients where they're mostly food related, and sometimes I wonder if that's more their conscious mind even getting involved in the process and kind of trying to give me what they think that I want or what makes the most sense, given that their issue is food. But otherwise, for the most part, there's just all kinds of other events that created feelings for them that then they're just trying to eat away.
Thank you. And that's exactly right. And so the scenes that she went to, they weren't uncommon for any kind of a regression. There was a scene where her sister was wearing her bunny slippers at age 9, and her mother didn't discipline her, so she thought her mother loved her sister more. There was another time at age 7 when her mom bought her sister a Barbie and that she wanted for Christmas, and again, she felt unlovable and kind of mad. And there was a lot of scenes with her sister. And so I started thinking, okay, probably the sister and the mom, you're going to probably have to do some forgiveness there. It'll help her a lot. But, it was interesting because we don't take care of anger. We don't take care of anger very often in the second phase. It's usually in the third phase. Sometimes the client will get insight and automatically they'll start feeling more forgiving, or they'll let go of some of the anger as they realize, looking back, that it really wasn't unfair after all, then sometimes they'll start feeling less angry and they'll get forgiveness on their own, sort of. But what I really was looking to uncover was fears and misconceptions. I did that. We worked through that. It really wasn't anything that unusual. I do direct suggestion for more of the same. She's going to eat less food less often, especially now that we've gotten rid of all these unresolved feelings. She'll feel more at ease, more at peace, and that will help her to have more self-control to continue with the good behaviors she's already been experiencing. I forgot to say this. When she came back in before the second session, she did say she was doing really well and was really pleased, making good food choices and everything.
Beautiful. Just to clear it up for those of you who may not know all of the phases of Five Path, when Celeste is referring to the second phase and the third phase, second phase is age regression. Third phase is forgiveness of others. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I know you know that most people that watch this know that, but there are occasionally people who don't, so I wanted to make sure that everybody knows what we're talking about.
There's probably a lot of people that don't know that, and it's been a while since I've done this, and so I just wasn't thinking. But, you know, I'm also trying to get this whole thing in. We only have a little bit of time, and so that's why I probably also kind of skipped that a little bit, but thank you. That cleared it up, I'm sure, for a lot of people. So session three, she comes back in. We've already worked through the age regression, so I'm thinking we're probably going to go to forgiveness of others. It's going to make a big impact because many of the SSEs, she was angry at her mom and her sister. My client had to skip a week before she came in for the third session, so already by the time she came in, it had been 3 weeks. She came in the following week saying that she was doing so much better, but she was disappointed that she hadn't even lost 1 pound. That made me go, ding, 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 3 weeks, not a pound of weight. She's playing racquetball. What's going on here? You know what I mean, Meredith?
I do know what you mean, and this does happen sometimes, those stubborn weight loss clients.
Yeah, and I just kind of go, let me ask you a question. Is there anything that you could be eating or drinking that maybe could be causing this, you know? And I try to kind of have a kind of tone so she doesn't feel like, you know, attacked or something. Anyway, and after kind of wiggling in the chair and hemming and hawing, she goes, well, there is kind of one thing that might be a problem. And I say, okay, well, tell me a little bit about it. She says, well, I do eat some cookie dough. And that kind of perked up my ears because cookie dough, I mean, that's high in calories. One spoon is like 128 calories. I recently looked it up on the internet. And, but I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's so many cookie dough ice cream and cookie dough this and cookie dough that. I'm thinking that Pillsbury probably has this little cookie dough thing in a little packet that maybe people can buy and eat, kind of like you would buy candy or something. So I'm just saying, okay, because she said she's doing really good, right? So I say, well, about how much are you eating every day? And she goes, oh, about as much as the recipe calls for. And I'm thinking, a whole bowl of cookie dough? You got to be kidding me. And so I say, well, how, you mean a whole bowl? And she gets really embarrassed and she says, yes. And she says, I make really good cookie dough. And she starts laughing. And I'm thinking, lady, you're paying me a lot of money not to tell me about this, you know? But that's okay. I keep my cool because I don't really know what's motivating her not to tell me. Maybe she thinks that because she's done everything else so well, because she did say she had a lot of changes, that she thinks the cookie dough is not going to be a problem. Or maybe she was embarrassed to tell me about it. I don't really know. So I try not to make a big deal out of it. You know what I mean, Meredith?
I do. And, you know, there are some of those clients that are in for weight loss that really want to hold on to certain behaviors. And, you know, whether it's like, look, I really won't give up my expensive gourmet meals out to dinner, or I really won't give up, you know, my desserts that I have nightly, that kind of thing. And maybe they think, well, maybe I can get away with continuing this behavior and the weight will come off. But clearly a whole bowl of cookie dough every day is an absolute sabotager.
Yeah. And so, so I say, okay, you know, I've been really trying to keep my cool here. I say, okay, I want you just to close your eyes for a moment. And I'm just going to ask you a question. Go deep inside yourself. Do you think cookie dough has like a little bit of calories or a lot of calories in it? And she says, well, it probably has a lot, but I'm doing better everywhere else. And she opens her eyes and looks at me. And I say, okay, well, go ahead and close your eyes again. I want you to go deep inside your heart. And I say, I want you to feel the answer to this question. Is eating cookie dough in such large quantities causing you to hold on to this weight? And has it been the cause of your weight gain? And she says, yes. And she looks really embarrassed and her face flushes and she starts to cry. And, you know, it's really interesting. It's like I've uncovered this secret shame or something. And it's, and like you were saying, you know, people sometimes just want to hold on to things. I think sometimes no matter how much you tell them, it's going to require their effort. There's a part of them that just thinks you can wave a magic wand and make it all go away. And so, I mean, she's feeling pretty humiliated here. And I'm thinking, man, what must it be like to be humiliated by cookie dough? You know? But anyway, I just tell her, because I feel pretty sorry for her. I say, hey, don't worry. I know just what to do. And so she perks up and she looks really hopeful. So we put her back into hypnosis, because that's what we do. And so once in hypnosis, I just have her go to a recent time when she, you know, really wanted to make or eat cookie dough. And she says, I'm at home. And I'm home all day alone, and there's nothing to do, and I'm alone, and I get the idea to make cookie dough. And I say, okay, what's that make you think? She says, I want to make cookie dough. And I say, okay, and what's that make you feel? She goes, well, I just want to make cookie dough. And I say, okay, but if you can't make the cookie dough, how will you feel? She goes, oh, nervous. And I say, okay, we'll focus on that feeling. And when she says that, Meredith, she puts her hand on her stomach. You know how they do?
Yes.
Yeah. And I say, okay, focus on that feeling as we follow it back to an earlier time when you felt that way. And this is where it starts to get really interesting. She's age 5 and her brother puts a hamster on her leg and she's terrified by this hamster and she screams and she cries and she curls up in my chair just as if she's there and it's happening right now. And she puts her fist to her cheek like this. She's very scared. And this alerts me because a 5-year-old isn't going to be scared of a hamster unless there's something else that sensitized them to this. So I'm thinking there's more to this story. And I think, okay, what's this make you think? He's going to bite me. He's going to bite me. You know, and then I say, what's this make you feel? She says, terrified. And I say, okay, focus on that feeling. Let's follow it back to an earlier time when you felt that way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, be there. First impression, indoors, outdoors, daytime, nighttime, alone or with swim, and all that kind of stuff. And anyway, she's age 3. She's holding up her nightgown and she's running and screaming and her mother is saying, don't let them get on your gown. Don't let them get on your gown. And she thinks, oh my God, these mice, they're all over the place. They're going to crawl up my gown and run up and bite me on the neck. That's why she's holding her hands like this. And I say, okay, what's that make you feel? And she says, I'm so scared. And I say, all right. And we, you know, we find out if it's familiar or new every time we do a scene like this. You got to find out if it's familiar or new. If it's familiar, then you follow it back to an earlier time when you felt that way. If it's new, it may be an indication of the beginning of it. Again, you need to watch the podcast with Meredith and Cal, really go in depth about age regression. It'll give you all the great techniques that you need to really do great age regression. Or you need to go to one of my classes. March 1st, we're doing our next class. And I think Cal has a class also on March 1st.
He sure does. March 1st through the 12th, his NGH hypnotherapy certification course. And if you're already certified, then you could, you know, either do that course or you could do the Week of Power, a 7-day course, May 16th through the 22nd.
And you'll get to work with clients like this and see this for yourself. And it is the bomb. I love this. It's so fun. It's so interesting. So she's 3 years old. She's running around trying to make sure that the mice don't, you know, climb up her gown. So she's really scared, so we have her focus on that feeling and follow it back to an earlier time when she felt that way. And she's age 10 months. She's in her playpen. She's doing just fine. When she suddenly hears her mother screaming and banging pots and pans all around. And I say, what's going on? She says, I don't know, but my mom's scared. And I say, well, how does that make you feel? She says, very scared. So we focus on that feeling and follow it back to an earlier time when she felt that way. And then when she gets there, I say, what's happening? She says, standing on the chair crying. And I say, how old are you? I think she's going to say she's older. She says, 2 months old. And I'm thinking, babies don't stand on chairs. What's going on? I say, and she says, mom is holding me and screaming. And I say, now what's happening? She says, mom's scared, really scared. Oh, I'm sorry. What I do is I tap her on the shoulder, okay? Because now I want to find out a little bit more from the grown-up part of her. Because when you do this kind of work, you separate your clients into the grown-up in your chair that came into your office. And as you go back in time, you're actually talking to another aspect of them, which is the regressed part of them. So I can talk to the two-month-old, and I usually will tap on one shoulder when I'm talking to the two-month-old. And then I usually tap on the hand, and that indicates I'm talking to grown-up, and I'll go back and forth. And so I tap her on the hand and I say, grown up, can you tell me what's going on here? And she says, we just moved into a brand new, beautiful house. And it's in the woods, and there's field mice everywhere, and they're all in the house, and it's like this beautiful house, but there's mice everywhere. And she says, my mom is just crazy, constantly looking for these mice and screaming. My dad's gone all day, and we're alone. Well, that perks up my ears. Why do you think, Meredith?
Well, goodness gracious, I can't wait to hear, but you know, when you're alone, you're clearly dealing with fear, and clearly that fear started earlier than that. So obviously you need to go back further, although you wouldn't want to just jump on that until you find out if it's familiar or new. But share to me what you think.
Well, what I'm thinking is, you know, when we went to the first time, the recent time when she made cookie dough, she was alone and she was nervous. So I'm thinking maybe this is where it came from. Maybe the subconscious is actually just reliving that fear. She's at home alone, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and so what I do is I do check out to see if, you know, it's familiar or new. She says new. This is the ISE, and she's 2 months old. And so, you know, it starts to make a lot of sense when grown-ups alone or subconscious is alert for mice. And so it feels so bad. She's so scared. She's so nervous. She starts eating. And I mean, this is what my gut tells me, so I decide to go with it, right? Sometimes you got to kind of figure out what might be happening and tie in your direct suggestion and cross your fingers and kind of figure it out. So I just say, all right, you know, we do the informed child, which helps to reduce that fear or actually resolve it. And that's another, again, a technique that you want to learn how to do when you do this kind of work, because you need to reduce or eliminate the negative feelings that are causing the problem. This feeling is causing the problem because it's been built up over time throughout these other events, and now it's so bad when she's at home alone, she doesn't know why, but she has to make cookie dough and eat it. And so, does that make sense, Meredith?
It does. And it's so important, too, that you are finding that insight, because the client won't necessarily put it together, you know, in that moment. And so that's part of why we get paid the big bucks, right? Because we're sitting there coming up with these connections in the moment. And, you know, and like I just was totally in left field with, you know, my connection, because I'm not there with the client. But when you're there with the client, you're always looking for those connections and then putting that into the direct suggestion work, giving them the insights and then bridging off of those insights to be able to give them the direct suggestions in the most acceptable manner, in the way that they're going to most readily accept them, in coming from that place of insight.
Yeah. And you know, the truth is when, like you were saying, when you're with them, you kind of get it's like you're in their energy. And so you get a pretty good intuition about what's going on. So you give them direct suggestions based on what makes sense to you. And sometimes they'll even tell you, they'll even get an aha, oh, now I see, you know. And then you say, see what, you know, or whatever. You ask them more questions to gain insight. But truthfully, you could get it wrong. But that's okay, because you always get a second chance. When they come back, they report to you how well they did, and then you're off and running again with whatever they present. Again, you learn all of this when you take Cal's training or my training. So I just say, now, you know, after we neutralize that emotion, I just say something like this. Now that that feeling is gone, you're never going to have to distract yourself or make yourself feel better by eating, because we've resolved that feeling. So you're going to have so much more control, and it's going to be so much easier for you to eat less food less often and reject cookie dough or anything that's fattening for you. And so I kind of pound that in. Then I work through all these other, what we call SSEs, other events that came up, making sure that she's holding on to the confidence. And so this client, she actually got a 2-for-1, you know, because she also got over a very serious fear of mice, and it would have been impossible for her to lose weight without dealing with that fear of mice. And so I've never seen ever a case where a client had a fear like this, like a fear of mice or a fear of spiders or a fear of dogs or fear of driving that caused a weight problem. This is the first, I mean, they have other general fears typically that will cause something like this. I mean, I would guess that if a psychologist looked at this, it might have even been a phobia. She was that scared. And a phobia is just a really strong fear, from my understanding. Is that not right, Meredith?
Yeah, absolutely. I have had a fear of driving case that was linked. They actually came in for the weight loss, and it was ultimately the fear of driving that was at the root of it. The fear of being in cars, being driven in cars, any kind of on-the-road transportation. And it was the same kind of a situation, actually, where they were linked together inherently. And who knew? I mean, she never mentioned her fear of cars. I mean, she had to be dropped off for all of her appointments and driven everywhere. And even then, that was completely terrifying because she was still in a car, but God forbid that she actually drove one herself. She would never do that, but never mentioned that to me. Didn't think it was relevant or important, but it was the same kind of thing where we were able to knock out both issues at once. And it just goes to show you that you can't ever try to figure it out ahead of time. You know, just because they have an eating issue doesn't necessarily mean that it's because, you know, it's a family problem, or it's something that, you know, developed because mom overeats and tried to nurture through food. You never know what you're going to find. And that's why, you know, we're just tour guides taking people through, you know, the age regression to find out what it is. Always kind of surprised to find what it is.
Yeah, your client got a 2-for-1 too.
Yes, love that.
Yeah. Well, so we use the techniques to get through all of these events that we use, Inform Child and that sort of thing. And so what ended up happening is, you know, that fear went away. But, you know, it also, kind of a side note, when I was working through the hamster scene, for some reason, maybe because I didn't do good enough work, or she didn't really take on the suggestions in an early scene, I'm not really sure what, but I had to take her through that scene several times for her to get desensitized to the hamster. And the whole time I'm doing this, the truth is that I had a pretty serious fear of rodents myself. So as I'm going through this, and I'm asking her, okay, what is it about this little animal that's bothering you? And she's going, his little eyes and his little hands, and he's crawling. I mean, the way it feels on my skin, I'm just like coming out of my skin almost unglued, but I have to help her. You know, I have to put my stuff aside to help her. And we go over and over and over, and in the process, it healed me. So that was also, to me, very fascinating. And when she came back for the next visit, she was so amazed that she only made cookie dough once and only in a very small amount. She worked it into her daily calorie count. She was very optimistic. You could tell a weight had been lifted off of her. And she said that she knew finally why she couldn't get her weight under control for so many years. And she said also that she wasn't afraid of bushes and trash cans anymore. And I looked at her quizzically. I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, I used to pass by trash cans and bushes and think there's surely going to be rats and mice in there, or rats and mice, so I always just would walk way around them. You know? So I thought, okay, this has been like really significant for her to change her life, and that was really interesting. And we did the next phase, which we work with anger, forgiveness of others. That's phase 3. And she overcame the anger at her mom and her sister. Phase 4 was forgiveness of self. And she forgave herself for, I don't remember what, but probably just allowing herself to be scared of rodents. And I always do a 30-day follow-up, and 30 days out, she had lost 12 pounds, and she was following a diet. She was sticking to it. She was still playing the racquetball. She was ecstatic with her results, and her husband was really happy, too. And did you know that 15 minutes of racquetball burns 420 calories?
Wow, I should get back into my racquetball. I used to play when I was younger. I had no idea.
Yeah, and so she had to be eating a significant amount of calories through that cookie dough, don't you think?
Well, I would think a whole bowl of cookie dough is about or even more than what most of us should really eat in a day, total calories.
I know. So that's my other fascinating case I wanted to share with everybody. This was fun, Meredith.
This was really fun. I wish we had more time to do more cases, but we are once again out of time. And, you know, this case just highlights so many things. And one of the things I did want to say about this case is that sometimes these are the kinds of cases, if the fear is that really strong and deep and inherent, where when you do the informed child technique with them, where the adult may not even be able to convince the child that the rodents aren't that scary, where you might have to even step in and help the adult do some of that. And it sounds like that's what you had to do. Is that right?
Oh, I had to do quite a bit of that, yes. And I wasn't sure. I mean, I did try to regress on the fear that wasn't going away. And we didn't go any further back. And I suspect that she didn't take on some of the suggestions in the prior SSEs. But, you know, we eventually worked it all out. She never loved. And I might have also, I admit, I might have also been trying to get her to like them too much. I mean, you don't have to love rats to be over your fear of them. You know, she didn't like them. But I thought when she said she really didn't like them, like they disgusted her, I thought maybe there was still some fear in there. So it was kind of questionable. So I kept taking her through it to make sure. And finally, when I got the idea that she was never really going to love them, to her, they just weren't lovable. But I wasn't really looking for her to love them. But I just thought that there was more that, as we went through, that she could have had more of a reaction of being calm. And for her, I guess the natural reaction was just, ew, I don't like them. But not any fear anymore. You know what I mean? So it took me a while to figure out that she was okay way before I actually stopped that process of going through it over and over again. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. You know, we don't all have to love reptiles. You know, a lot of people don't like snakes, but that doesn't mean that they have an eating problem. And so you're right. I mean, this was a learning experience for you. You know, you can meet someone halfway and still get results, still be successful. They don't have to be in love with the thing that they were afraid of to be able to lose the weight. But every case is different. Every client is a learning experience. And, you know, with each one, we just keep growing and learning how to better facilitate our path, our work. Isn't that true?
Yes. And I can see rats now and not get the heebie-jeebies anymore.
Yay. So it was a 3-for-1.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, why don't you go ahead and sign off, Celeste? Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
All right. Well, visit me at familyfirsthypnosis.com and Dallas Hypnosis Career Training. And would you please make me a friend on Facebook? Just go sign on to Facebook, get an account, and just when you search for a person, Celeste Hackett. I'd love to be your friend, and I'm trying to get 1 million friends.
1 million friends, Celeste? My goodness.
Well, I mean, it was just a number that I thought sounded really good.
They say Facebook is like a country. So, you know, we've got lots of millions of people in this world. You could very well meet that goal. I could see it happening. Well, thanks again, Celeste, for being here with me, co-hosting this fabulous, fascinating case history podcast. If you missed the last one, please do check it out. Next podcast, Cal will be back. Definitely tune in for that. This has been a lot of fun. We do need your comments, your questions, your feedback, all of that. You can either post it right down there on calbanion.com just below this podcast or any other more recent podcast, because I do look back for those. You can also go to ourhypnospace.com and post on the Ask Cal group, or you can email me directly, meredith@yourpathhypnosis.com, my website, yourpathhypnosis.com. Thank you guys all so much. This is Meredith Locker signing off.
This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.